President Trump recently signed an executive order that aims to improve access to care for people living with kidney disease.
I'm here to say we are fighting by your side, and we're determined to get you the best treatment anywhere in the world. And we've made a lot of progress. We're with you every step of the way. In a few moments, I'll sign an executive order taking vital steps to increase the supply of kidney available transplants.
In addition to making transplants more available, the goals of the order include kidney disease prevention and making in-home dialysis treatment more available. Dr. Dawn Wolfgram is a nephrologist at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. She's also associate professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin and is section chief of nephrology at the Milwaukee VA Medical Center. Dr. Wolfgram, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
What are the main causes of kidney disease?
The main causes of kidney disease are high blood pressure or hypertension and diabetes mellitus. Those comprise probably almost 70% of kidney disease in the United States.
And the other 30% is a variety of things?
Yep, it's a variety of things. They can be genetically inherited disorders. They can be due to autoimmune diseases, sometimes due to kidney stone disease. So definitely a lot of different things can go into the other category.
Do we know how many people in Wisconsin have kidney disease?
So we do have estimates. About 15% of the United States population has kidney disease, and that would be pretty much the same prevalence you would see here in Wisconsin. Based on our population, that would be around maybe 800,000 to 900,000 people or Wisconsin residents. One thing that I did want to mention is that the awareness of kidney disease is still quite low. Back in, I think it was early 2010 or so, they did a national study looking at self-report of health conditions, and only about 2% of the Wisconsin respondents reported having kidney disease. So you can see very few people reported having it compared to what we know is prevalent.
So there may be a pretty large number of people who are living with kidney disease but are not aware of it yet.
Exactly.
What are some of the most common treatment approaches for kidney disease?
So for early stages of kidney disease, really the treatment is geared at treating the underlying cause. So for high blood pressure, we try to control the blood pressure. For diabetes, you get your glucose under control. For the other diseases, you know, we treat autoimmune diseases and kidney stone disease, things like that. And so that's our treatment for, like I said, the early stages of kidney disease. Once you get more advanced kidney disease and you're looking at kidney failure, that's when you talk about what are called renal replacement options. And renal replacement options really boil down to transplant, dialysis, or just continuing medical management, which really is focused more than on symptom control and quality of life rather than sort of life prolonging.
I think most of us have heard the term dialysis, but I'm not sure that everyone's aware what that really does and what it entails. What does dialysis do to support or replace kidney function?
So what dialysis does is it uses a solution really to draw out excess toxins and basically metabolites that have accumulated in our body and extra fluid and gets rid of it like your kidneys would. Now, there's a couple forms of dialysis. The most common is hemodialysis, and that's where we take blood from the patient. It runs through the dialysis machine, goes through a filter, and then is returned to the patient. And that process happens at least 3 times a week for about 3 to 4 hours each time. That's done in center. Other forms of dialysis include home dialysis, where you can do peritoneal dialysis, and there we actually use the peritoneal cavity to infuse the dialysate, and it dwells there, sort of draws out those extra solutes and toxins, as I was mentioning before.
Can you explain what that cavity is for us?
Oh, the peritoneal
yes.
cavity. So it's in your abdomen, and it's really just the space between your abdominal organs and your abdominal wall.
And one of the Trump administration's goals is to make that at-home dialysis available to more people. What does it entail to achieve that goal?
So really, in order to improve rates of home dialysis, we need to make sure we have patient education on that option and also support for the patients, because a lot of patients, you know, feel very wary about being in charge of their dialysis and actually doing it themselves, because that is what home dialysis usually entails. Either the patient themselves or a caregiver provides the dialysis at home. So we need to provide better patient education and support, and then we also need to make sure we have structure within our clinics and our dialysis units to have the nursing support to train these patients, to monitor these patients, the physicians to do that too, and really try to improve the ways we can offer it even outside the home. So like in other places such as nursing homes, things like that, where patients, well, you know, a lot of patients may be on dialysis.
What kind of equipment is involved in that at-home dialysis?
So there are two different at-home dialysis methods. So one is peritoneal dialysis, which I mentioned, and then the other is home hemodialysis. Both of them do require a dialysis machine. The peritoneal dialysis machine is pretty small. It would be the size of what you would think of being one of those not really used anymore PC towers, you know, mm-hmm. but can fit on a desk. And the main, space constraint is actually having room for the dialysate, because those are shipped out every 2 weeks and it's something that's used every night, about 10 liters or so. So you are having to store a lot of dialysate. The home hemodialysis machine is a little bit bigger, but it's still, you know, probably 3 to 4 feet tall, 1.5 foot wide type of thing. And there it comes with a different portable machine that actually reconstitutes the dialysate. So sometimes you don't have to have as much storage space for that.
We're talking with Dr. Dawn Wolfgram. She's a nephrologist at Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin and an associate professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin as well. We're talking about an executive order that President Trump signed recently that is aimed at helping people living with kidney disease. And, of course, there is also the option of a kidney transplant. How does someone qualify to receive a kidney?
So the kidney transplant evaluation process is pretty extensive. So in order to qualify for a kidney transplant, one, you have to be physically fit to undergo the surgery, because we do not want to have patients undergo surgery that might be too high risk for them and then they suffer complications such as cardiovascular events or something during that surgery time. The other is that you need to have the ability or have the support to manage a complex medical regimen. Transplant requires lifelong medications afterwards, very intensive follow-up in the peritransplant period, and followed by, you know, pretty routine surveillance to make sure they're catching any signs of rejection or problems that might be occurring. So you have to have, you know, good compliance with medical care, be able to manage those medications, be healthy enough to undergo the surgery for transplant, and basically, those are the things we evaluate when we decide if somebody is eligible for a kidney transplant.
And how available are kidneys for people who need them?
So right now, there is a wait list for kidney transplants. Nationwide, it's about 94,000, and there's about 20,000 kidneys done in a year. And so you can see that the number of kidney transplants is much less than the wait list, and it's also less than the number of kidneys transplant people that are added to the wait list each year. In Wisconsin, we have about 1,500 people on our wait list. We do about 400 transplants per year, and about 500 people are added to the wait list per year. So you can see definitely there is a scarcity of available organs for our wait listed people.
This executive order that President Trump signed, one of the goals of it is to increase the number of kidneys that are available. What are they proposing to bring those numbers more in balance?
So to increase the access to kidney transplant, their goal is, you know, is quite aspirational. They want to double the number of kidneys available for transplant by the year 2030. And there's two ways they want to go about that. One is they want to increase utilization of available organs, specifically from deceased donors. And so that means that there are organs procured, and about 18% of those organs are not used in transplant. They're discarded. And they can be discarded for a number of reasons, including medical reasons. But what they're trying to do is figure out ways to make sure that organ procurement organizations are still considering these organs as potentials and have enough education to make that decision. And they're also trying to think about, you know, more use of virally infected deceased donors. So patients who have hepatitis C, you know, 10 years ago, hepatitis C was you know, very hard to treat. It was a difficult treatment and very poor cure rates. But now that has really turned around with new therapies, and it's essentially curable with our current therapy. And so if we can use those kidneys, you know, that can increase our available organ supply. Kidneys from donors who have hepatitis C are actually growing right now because of the opioid epidemic.
Mm-hmm. And they also want to make it easier for people living donors to donate kidneys.
Right. So that's the second part of the increasing access to transplant is increase the number of living donors. And so what they want to do is they want to remove disincentives to donations and ensure sort of ensure adequate financial support. So one thing they're trying to do is expand the reimbursement of travel and subsistence expenses toward living organ donation. They're trying to do that sort of by increasing the income threshold that is needed for that, so more people would qualify. They're also looking to provide reimbursement for lost wages up to $5,000.
And briefly, before we let you go, what should we all know about keeping our kidneys healthy?
So as I mentioned at the beginning, the leading cause of kidney disease here in the United States is diabetes and high blood pressure. And both of those are preventable and treatable. So making sure you adopt healthy lifestyle that reduce the risk of those conditions, you know, maintaining a healthy weight, diet low in processed foods, incorporating regular activity, not smoking, just in general, taking care of yourself will prevent those diseases and then prevent the complications of them, including kidney disease.
Well, Dr. Wolfgram, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Dawn Wolfgram is a nephrologist at Fraidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. She joined us to talk about the new federal directives on kidney disease prevention and treatment.